Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Finding You with Marvin Roan and my co-host Stan Macklin. We have another exciting episode for you today, so sit back, relax, do what you do, and allow the Finding You team to do what they do. Right here today, Finding You, another wonderful episode. And your favorite blog talk radio show starts right now. Welcome to Finding You in another episode. Be in favor today, people. Be in favor. And what I mean by that is, it's the practice of working on yourself. So we start with the pledge every week. And that pledge is, I will work on myself. And that's all you need to do. Just work on yourself. I will take the time to set aside quiet time. I will set aside time for myself, time to reflect, time to just kind of get myself together and get in tune with my thoughts, get myself organized, focus on my goals, and begin to do the things that I know I need to do to become a better person. And that's what it's all about. It's all about working on yourself. And that's what the Empowerment Pledge is all about. And so we're encouraging you to do the same thing. But you have to do it every day. You have to work on yourself. You have to make a commitment to work on yourself today, each day, every day, one day at a time. Today is Hodgepodge Wednesday. Potluck Wednesday, we're going to talk about different topics, things that may be on your mind, things that Stan and I come up with, things that we're going to just kind of bring into the fold. And so today we're going to talk about Dr. King's Way again briefly, and then we'll get on to some other topics. But Dr. King's Way, very, very simple. His way was one of peace, and that peace has to translate into your lives, into your household, into your families, into your relationships. Allow Dr. King's way, no matter what your race, creed, color, just imagine for a moment if there is no color, if there is no individual body that the message comes from, but the message comes that you have to have peace and peaceful relations with others, and that transitions into your every part of your life. And so that's what it's all about today. And without further delay, here, coming to you live from our Harrisonburg studios, my co-host Stan Macklin. Stan, how are you?
Stan Macklin is doing great today. It's a little cold out there, but I tell you, it's warm inside my heart, so I guess that makes the difference.
That's right. You said it yesterday, it was the Hawk. The Hawk is out.
Yeah, he's brought his family with. They're here in full force, and they're not playing around. That's what, when we were growing up back in Illinois, that's what we called it, the Hawk. He would come and swoop down over you, and that's just it. You're just shivering with cold. But it seems like across America that the Hawk is having wrecking havoc, especially down in Atlantic. Atlanta, it shut down that whole city. People had to even, school kids couldn't even get on the bus. Those that did found themselves in the ditch, and they spent the night in the school, and people got stranded on the highway. It was almost like some end time stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you, this is something here. So it's a lot that's going on in the midst of business as usual. Yeah, I tell you. So how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, man. I'm over here, you know, we had some snow last night, and so it gave me a time to do some more reflection and contemplation more than I would if I had to go out in it. But I was thinking about this thing in Atlanta, man, about how the parents had to trust the teachers and the administration with their children,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they weren't able to go home.
No.
Couldn't get to them. So we got to trust you. Now, we allow you to have them between 6 and 7 hours a day, but keeping my babies overnight was questionable for some parents down there.
Well, you know, some teachers feel like they're babysitters anyway, but this mm-hmm. is a time where they really did become babysitters. And notice this. You know what they had them doing? they were playing video games.
What?
Video games. And of course, they would, you know, they're going to constantly be in the cafeteria. but I'm sure that was kind of an unusual situation. We're so used to the way things are. We're so used to the normal that to the extent, like it happened when Katrina hit, people find themselves in unfortunate situations. And
true.
We're just unprepared how to deal with the unusual. When it hits, it happens. And it's no reason why we should not be better prepared for things. But I guess we just don't know. And people just got out of the frustrated, just got out of their cars and start walking down the highway. And if you, you know, if you've ever been down Atlanta, you know they got some traffic. And it was just, you know, because ice came and it just paralyzed that whole region. And the stories are coming out. And it's just something how that when catastrophe comes, we're kind of ill-equipped. We don't know what to do. It was so bad that the traditional methods of the salt trucks couldn't even do what they normally do. They just had the men in the back of the trucks just tossing out the salt.
Wow.
So it's no reason to say that just because you have the four seasons that they're going to be like they is, like they're supposed to be, I guess. I guess the good Lord can change things any way he sees fit. But that's just with the weather there. But the State of the Union was last night. Obama's 2014 State of the Union. And I tell you what, I got this broken down where we can hear just a snippet of this in 60 seconds. Here we go.
Is a fact. And when our children's children look us in the eye and ask if we did all we could to leave them a safer, more stable world with new sources of energy, I want us to be able to say, yes, we did. It is time to heed the call of business leaders, labor leaders, faith leaders, law enforcement, and fix our broken immigration system. Let's work together to close those loopholes and those incentives to ship jobs overseas and lower tax rates for businesses to create jobs right here at home. Let's not have another 40-something vote to repeal a law that's already helping millions of Americans like Amanda. I will issue an executive order requiring federal contractors to pay their federally funded employees a fair wage of at least $10.10 an hour. We need to work together on tools like bipartisan trade promotion authority to protect our workers, protect our environment, and open new markets to new goods stamped made in the USA.
There you go.
Well, all right.
I tell you, there's some, not necessarily anything new in the midst of that, but what is in that is some strong affirmation that if you don't work with me, I'm going to work around you. I'm going to use my executive powers to make a difference, to help people. And this president seems like he's definitely committed to the people. You know, institutional power sometimes can go any which way the wind blows, but he seems like he wants to do something. He says that for federal contractors to have a mandatory $10 an hour and 10 cents. And then another big one, immigration reform.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, the Republicans are committed to a step-by-step process in terms of trying to create some kind of clear pathway to citizenship, but that step-by-step sometimes is out of step. And I think that Mr. President needs to be commended for his desire to work with the House and the Senate, Congress per se, to make a difference. But you know, when you looked at him, something has happened to him in terms of he's really he's caught up with me. I'm talking about in terms of being great. they say stress can bring that on, having the hardest job in the world. But what about that? You heard some things on that news clip there that I played. Did you think I got it pretty good in 60 seconds?
Oh, man. Beautiful. Beautiful, Stan. As always, man. Greatest co-host in the world.
Yeah.
I think what we're hearing is a call for action. But not only is it a power move that he's making an executive power move because now he's telling them what he wants to do. And I will work around you or through you or beyond you to get some agendas accomplished. And I thought that was pretty significant for him because I think he's always kind of played the backseat to, I think, his adversaries or his naysayers. And now this is a great time for him to begin to show the strength that a president needs to show. And, you know, he's already proven to us, in my mind, that he's very capable of handling the toughest situation that you can come into and become successful. All you got to do is look at our automakers, you know, and how the government saved that and now the wonderful things that are happening because of it. What do you think?
Well, you know, you open up about some of the principles of Martin Luther King Jr. and jobs was very much in the forefront. And I think that that's something that's very important. You know, when you got Congress doing crazy things like cutting off people's unemployment benefits, their unemployment insurance, come on now. Talking about some, I actually heard some of the people saying it makes people lazy. Makes them dependent. That old rhetoric is what they used during the old welfare scenario, what they did in terms of that. But it doesn't. Sometimes we all go through transitions. We all go through situations where we have to make ends meet. And sometimes those ends don't meet. And you need assistance. You need help to carry you over until you get that next career opportunity. And there was a time in my life, I mean, I'm just fortunate right now where I'm blessed. I don't have to be in that situation again. To God be the glory, because it's better having than not having. But where I had to have that check coming, and I did what I was supposed to do in terms of looking. And there was sometimes I got so tired of looking that I looked in places where I know they wasn't gonna hire me because I didn't have the right complexion. And wouldn't put that down. But, you know, when you cut off a lifeline like that, come on, what's wrong with America? You know, government is supposed to be of the people, for the people, and by the people. And many times it's the politicians, they're kind of like pimping the system. Not as strong. But it shouldn't be like that. And, you know, I talk about those kingdoms. But people need situations where they can draw those benefits to carry them over, not that it's going to make you lazy or dependent. But I just think that he had a plate full, and he's cut that plate down. And not even talking about some of the other things, such as this is a year that we should totally be out of committed wars. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking in terms of Afghanistan. And so I commend the brother. He still has two more years. He's in there till, you know, end of 2016. And so I think that they're starting to realize that he's definitely not going nowhere. He's definitely going to not crumble to make a difference. But what do you think? I just know that there's some real issues out there. And what's your perspective on immigration reform?
Well, as we find ourselves, because that's what finding you is all about, you know, I happen to see this documentary on immigration immigration reform this morning on PBS, and I thought it was really really profound as it spoke to some issues that Arizona is experiencing and some of the legal moves that they've made to kind of curb and the challenges that individual citizens that are not Hispanic or Latino are experiencing because of the racism and the profiling. And so I think as citizens, we have to be able to put ourselves in our brothers and sisters' shoes for a minute. You know, everybody is desiring a new life and a fresh start. And, you know, there are ways that we have to do that. And I understand the political part of it, but it's still human beings. And this earth actually belongs to all of us. And so as we deed land and all of that and where you can go and you need a passport for this, at the end of the day, we're all brothers and sisters, we're all human beings, and all of us have a space on this planet that belongs to us, is inherited, is entitled to us. So, you know, I don't understand why we have to go through so much control over properties and land and things like that. But that's my opinion on it, man. I think we got to look at the human side of it. I mean, you know, they're taking over. Who are they? Because somebody took over before somebody else took over. So don't do that. That's not right. And we have to start being really exact about what's going on here and how these judgments, even what you talked about with they're going to take advantage of it or they're going to be lazy. Those are all stereotypes that are thrown out there. But I know a lot of people who have used that and have benefited from the system, and it's those people. And I say every last one of those people have either been in a position where they didn't have the need or it's third or fourth hand information that's being spewed out there.
Well said, my brother, and I think that can be the year, and I know that here on the local level, we don't plan on letting up at all to make a difference because there should be a clear pathway to citizenship. Mm-hmm. Now, another bold thing that President Obama stated was in terms of the minimum wage. I think minimum wage kind of rose around $7 an hour, and you know, that just don't cut the mustard making meat properly. And some employers are taking it on themselves to raise it their hourly wage to $10 an hour. President Obama calls it 10-10, but I something I need to look into more on that there, but I know that people need the opportunity to have to make a decent wage and so forth. But it just seems like there's so much out there, so much going on in that, and when you got a Congress that doesn't exercise maturity, I know I watched as he was coming in and kind of, because I'm a big component of studying body language, and Congressman Cantor, Eric Cantor, he just turned his back to him, right to him. Could say, well, was he distracted or what's up? But no, it looked intentional to me, you know. And he's the minority whip, and it's just, you know, how many people get hatred like that, or such a strong dislike? You know, people used to say in the old days, this is what I used to hear from some of them elders. They say, two things you can't talk about, that's religion and politics. And they literally meant that. If those subjects came up, they were like taboo. You didn't get in them because people would get to arguing, people would get to fighting. Somebody might get killed and over that. But what about that?
Well, I think you're right. And, you know, the significant part for me is it goes to a couple of things in terms of America's promise to all of us. And that promise is life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And in that process, you have to talk about religious views because, you know, you have all different faiths that are working together. We have to work together now. But more than this promise is there's a disparity that's clear and is being ignored by, I would say, the powers that be, and even in our leadership. And I think President Obama is trying to bring that out or bring it forth. But we have to get to a position where everybody has the opportunity to make ends meet first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got to make ends meet. But more than that, it's two things. It is complexion for some of us. And that's whether you have papers or not, or whether you come from a strong bred family or not. And the second thing is credentials. And we're having a problem from my community is being able to have those credentials and qualify for those credentials, because you still have a lot of individuals who are first generation college students or even high school graduates, and it's the mid 2000s. We're almost
But come
15.
On, Ron. But come on, you know, that used to be it used to be one of the chief swords of the right concerning persons not being qualified. I think that people of color are more qualified now than ever. Not saying that the opportunity is not there for additional skill training and enhancement. But people of color cover almost every sphere of development that exists, from cyberspace to outer space. I think we're there, brother.
Okay.
I think the structures, which, as you open up with King was fighting against the structures of exclusion that and of course they had Jim Crow and segregation that was operating at that time. I don't think you have to so much worry about the vicious dogs biting you or the pressure fire hoses, water being sprayed on you, or the billy club. Well, you might get the billy clubs hit upside your head if you get out of place. But there's been some progress, but we are qualified to the extent that we've had people of color as chief of police, as the mayors of city, and you know, in CEOs and that, and but it still is basically lily white in a lot of these basic institutions. And I think that the message of King, in a sense, has almost been lost in terms of pressuring the institutional powers to think about the people. It's almost like they forget about the needy, it's about the greedy. You know, what happened in the state of Virginia with the exit of Governor McDonald walking right into federal corruption, that's sickening. But is it a case where he just got caught? I don't know. And up in New Jersey, where it seems like political favors is the order of the day, if you don't do this, that you're going to get penalized from getting Sandy funds to rebuild and fix up your city. So, you know, it seems like there's a lot of game playing that's going on. What do you think?
Well, first of all, we have to call it what it is. If you look around the room last night in our America, right, who are we looking at? And as this melting pot begins to unthaw, look at who's there. Look at who's representing us. And is this representation of the people? Now, I saw the room for myself, and there were a few people in there, but it was a whole lot of everybody else in there too. And what I mean by that is the place is white, and it's not racism, but I think you have to have diversity, and you have to have a complexion of the country that represents the people. I don't think we have that. I think we got to get to a point where the education meets the demand, and I think we have to get to leadership being the same way. Because if you look up, other than President Obama and then Michelle, I saw her and then two or three other African-American women and a few older African-American gentlemen, That was it. I didn't see any Native Americans in there. They're part of this country, too. You have to be reflected of that. It has to be all ethnic groups a part of what we're doing here. It just can't be one-sided anymore. Things have to change. If we're going to reach America's true potential and true promise, we have to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very important. That's very important because I know for a fact that people of color are going to speak up change and inclusion and representation. But I think that our white brothers and sisters are going to have to do likewise. It's very comfortable to reside in the ship of white privilege and just to absorb and just to, you know, you don't have to worry about this or worry about that. Not that there's not a certain segment, but, you know, take like in my city, the average student at the prominent university there, their average medium household income is at least $100,000, and you know that says something when that's the average income of the student body there, and so you know white privilege does exist, and it many times can take for granted some of the things that exist where it's unfortunate for other people that just are not there like that. And, you know, and then you take that and you stir that up in white denial where it's almost non-existent. I did in case if you're in the radio audience, you don't know that I'm a person of color. I am. I happened to go to lunch with a white brother. And I said before we go in, I said, now we go in there. I said, we're going to both order our food and so forth. And I'm going to tell you something right now. They're going to serve you first. And so we went in there and we sat down. And I was fortunate enough and sat down. And I ordered my food first. He ordered his food. And when the food came out to be served to us, guess what happened?
What?
They served him first. He said, "You called that one right, didn't you?" I said, "Yep." So I said, "I'm an ass. I said, not disturb anything like this because this is something you get used to, whatever." And I said, "So we asked the waitress. We said, why did you serve him first?" And I said, "She said, I didn't notice." And I think that's what happens many times. People just don't notice what's going on. They don't take notice of the realities that are existing that separate and builds a chasm between people. And we have to work together because the cost of these inequities are just enormous. And you know, my goal out is to work to the city I live in and help it to be one of the best cities in the nation. That's sensitive to that of all people being included. So I think we got work to do. And the thing that I'll never forget, King is dead, but we are alive.
The dream still lives. The dream still lives. And there you have another episode of Finding You with Marvin Rowan and my co-host, Stan Macklin. We do this every week at 3 p.m. and we'll continue to do it. Chill. Change some. And so we're advocating for change and peace right here on Finding You. Join us again next week at 3 p.m. for another episode of your favorite show, Finding You. Thank you, Stan, so much. And I'm Melinda for all of your help and assistance with the program. Love on somebody, be peaceful, and we'll talk to you next week. Peace.